This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Confringe reading series.
I've just got one brief announcement to make before we start, which is Mr. Pete Sutton. You've won second prize in a beauty contest. No, you've won second prize in a short story writing competition. What Lies Ahead, which was the competition that we ran in conjunction with the Watershed back in October. And Pete won a prize. What was your story called? Minding Neve. Anyway, it needs a bit of work still because you didn't finish it, but nevertheless, on the basis of potential, it was very good. And congratulations. Joe has a small prize token of our appreciation.
Okay, Roz isn't hosting, I'm hosting. Welcome to the Bristol Confringe. Today we've got Pete and Emma Newman, who are awesome. They've come in to read for us. So I'd like to say hello to them. And Pete is going to go first, and I believe he's going to be reading from his novel The Vagrant, which is out in February. So,
cool. April.
Yeah. So that's just wishful thinking, isn't it? I was hoping it was February, but no, not till
I'd be less relaxed.
Okay, nice big round of applause for Pete, please.
So, this is The Vagrant. It's coming out from Harper Voyager on the 23rd of April this year, so not too long to wait. I'm going to read to you today from the first two chapters. So here we go. Chapter 1. Starlight gives way to bolder neon. Signs muscle in on all sides, brightly welcoming each arrival to New Horizon. The Vagrant does not notice. His gaze fixes on the ground ahead. People litter the streets like living waste, their eyes as hollow as their laughter. Voices beg and hands grasp, needy, aggressive. The Vagrant does not notice and walks on, clasping his coat tightly at the neck. Excited shouts draw a crowd ahead, a mixture of half-bloods and pimps, dealers and spectators gather in force. Platforms rise up in the street, unsteady on legs of salvaged metal. Wire cages sit on top. Within, shivering forms squat, waiting to be sold. For some of the assembled, the flesh auction provides new slaves. For others, fresh meat. Unnoticed in the commotion, the Vagrant travels on. The centre of New Horizon is dominated by a vast scrapyard dubbed the Iron Mountain, a legacy from the war. At its heart is the gutted corpse of a fallen skyship. Its cargo of tanks and fighters has spilled out in the crash, forming a skirt of scattered metal at the mountain's base. Always opportunistic, the inhabitants of New Horizon have tunnelled out its insides to create living spaces and shops, selling on the skyship's treasures. Scavenged lamps hang, colouring the shadows. One tunnel is illuminated by a glowing hoop, off-white and erratic. In the pale light, the low ceiling is the colour of curdled milk. Awkwardly, the Vagrant enters, bending his legs and bowing his head, his back held straight. Corrugated shelves line the walls, packed with bottles, tins and tubes. The owner of the rusting cave hunches on the floor, cleaning a syringe with a ragged cloth. He appraises the Vagrant with a bloodshot eye. A new customer? The Vagrant nods. Syringe and cloth are swiftly tucked away, and yellowing fingers rub together. Ah, welcome, welcome. I am Dr. Zero. I take it you've heard of me. The Vagrant nods. Of course you have. That's why you're here. Well, what can I get you? You look tired. I have the finest selection of uppers this side of the breach. Or perhaps something to escape with? His eyes twinkle, sleazy, seductive. One hand still on his collar, the Vagrant's amber eyes roam the shelves. They alight on a small jar, its label faded to a uniform grey. Ah, discerning customer, says Dr. Zero, impressed. Rare to have somebody who knows what they're looking for. Most of the rabble I get through here can't tell the difference between stardust and sawdust. He picks up the jar, flicking something sticky from the lid. I assume whoever sent you appreciates the scarcity of good medicine. And the cost? In answer, the Vagrant kneels and places two platinum coins on the ground, sliding them across the floor towards the doctor. I hope you aren't trying to trick me, the doctor replies, picking them up and tapping each one in turn with his finger. The coins vibrate, and a brief two-note duet fills the cramped space. For a moment, neither speak. Both move to other memories by the sound. Dr. Zero holds them to the light, the clean discs incongruous with his sallow skin. "My apologies," he says, handing the jar over quickly, hoping no change will be asked for. "And if you have any other needs, don't hesitate to come back." Dr. Zero watches the vagrant go, his fingers twisting together, untwisting and twisting again. He picks up the syringe and, after a moment's deliberation, pricks his finger on it, wincing at the little stab of pain. A bead of blood appears on the end of his finger. He waits until it has grown to the size of a small pea, and then whispers his message. The vagrant makes his way towards the city gates, famous for always being open. The demagogue, demonic caretaker of the city, claims this is because New Horizon admits anyone, a lie to conceal their dysfunction. The great engines that control the gates are silent, critical parts stolen or broken long ago. Beggars' cries mix with heavy drumming and the taste of sweat. A girl, aged prematurely by life, pulls at the vagrant's arm. "Hey, you come from Zeros? You want to share?" She runs a hand over her curveless frame. "You give me high, I'll give you ride. Big high, big ride." The vagrant stops, looking at her hand until she withdraws it. He walks on, the girl's stream of curses following after. A large hound-like animal sits on its haunches, square in the middle of the road. Tainted by infernal influence, it is larger than its ancestors, fearsome, ferocious, a dog spawn. No handler is in sight, and the usually easygoing wastrels of New Horizon give it a wide berth. The vagrant does the same. It watches him with mismatched eyes, one canine, black in the poor light, unreadable, but the other human one, it flickers in recognition. Somewhere outside the city, a handler watches, viewing the wanderer through their swapped orbs. For a time, both are still, and the crowd follows the lead of the fading stars above, retreating, one by one, into the darkness. The dogspawn pants heavily, its foul breath adding to the thick cocktail of smoke and rot that passes for New Horizon's air. The vagrant does not run. There is no point. Over the years, desperate prey have tried many things to hide its scent from these half-breeds. Perfume, mud, excrement, even the blood of another member of the dogspawn's pack. All fail. The hunters do not track the body's scent. The vagrant knows this. It is why the rest of the pack and their handlers lie dead. With a growl, the dogspawn stands up, refuse clinging to blood-crusted legs. It pads forward with difficulty, dragging itself through the muck. The vagrant watches, unmoving. 8 meters from him, the dogspawn leaps. It is a weak gesture, a mere suggestion of its usual power. The vagrant steps back, leaving it to sprawl exhausted at his feet. Its flanks heave, gasping and ragged. Blackish blood dribbles from its rear. Soon it will die. The growls soften, become a whine which gives way to a fading, wheezy pant. The vagrant steps around the body, but the dogspawn is not quite dead. It snaps at him with the last of its strength, too slow to catch his ankle, but the long teeth snare his coat. The vagrant pulls at it, once, twice, the dogspawn glaring at him through half-closed eyes. Its jaws stay locked onto the worn material in a last act of defiance. The vagrant continues to pull, harder and more urgently, until fabric tears on teeth. He pulls free, but there is a cost. His coat is opened by the struggle. The dogspawn's eyes open one final time, widening at what is revealed. In the crook of his arm, a baby sleeps, oblivious. Chubby cheeks are dusted with fever spots. A sword hangs at the vagrant's side, a single eye glaring from the crosspiece. It returns the dogspawn's dying stare, peering beyond to find the tether of essence that will lead to its tainted handler. Swiftly, the vagrant walks towards the great gates of New Horizon, pulling his coat about him once more. The rust-bruised gates loom high, thick chains frozen along their length. To their right is a watchtower, ruined, its broken roof hanging from defunct cables. The vagrant passes under its shadow and over the city's boundary, walking purposefully into the gloom beyond. Chunks of rock jut out across the barren landscape, a row of giant's teeth. Repeated bombardments and exposure to poisonous demonic energies have taken their toll on the environment. Craters pepper the ground like pup marks. There are no trees, no colour, and little life to be seen. The blasted lands are named without irony. From nearby, a cry rings out, quickly muffled. It is enough. The vagrant turns and moves towards the sound. Behind a jagged slab of stone sits the handler, cradling his head. His dark animal eyes necrosed in his skull, making nerve endings scream. The handler does not know he is found. The vagrant crouches, carefully lays the baby in the dust. He stands slowly, his blade singing as it tastes the air. Now the handler realizes. He scrabbles backwards, promises babbling from his lips until the vagrant shadow covers him. Abruptly, there is silence. Stick-like people and bloated flies gather in the twilight, both drawn to the still warm corpse of the dog spawn. By morning, they have picked the bones clean. By afternoon, half of the people have died, their stomachs unable to accept the rich meat. By evening, their skeletons are bartered over by necrotraders. In New Horizon, nothing is wasted. Chapter 2. On the outskirts of New Horizon, a caravan has formed, preparing to leave with the dawn. The vagrant joins it, blending with the ragged collection of traders and travellers, lost and forgotten. Axles creak, and packed beasts grunt, and people shuffle. As New Horizon recedes like a fading nightmare, tongues loosen, and conversation hums uncertainly. The yellow half of the sun is the first to rise that day, crowning the sky gold. The merchants, ruled by superstition, take this as a good sign, one even going so far as to share his drink with a neighbour in Thanksgiving. For most, though, the colour only alters the palette of hopelessness. Soon the horizon takes on a reddish tint, heralding the second sunrise of the day. Once, a single star warmed the world. None remember that time, though all agree that it must have been better then. People thought that when the sun tore, it would bring about the end of the world, but the two star fragments did not explode as predicted, nor did they blaze down from the heavens, raining fire and destruction. Instead, they continue their slow orbit of the sky and each other, like drunken dance partners, struggling on long past the death of the music. The vagrant approaches one of the largest wagons, drawing the driver's attention away from his roll-up. A word squeezes out around the stub. Yeah? The vagrant looks to the rear of the wagon and back to the driver. Another precious coin changes hands, and the vagrant is allowed inside. Beyond the curtain, the back of the wagon is full of boxes, scratched plastic and battered metal. No space is wasted, even the smells squeezed to fit between the crates. A few are covered with threadbare cloth, but they are the exceptions. The majority brazenly expose their wares. The vagrant is uninterested. He glances over his shoulder, pulling the fabric between him and the world outside. In the cramped square of privacy, he removes his coat and sword, squatting awkwardly with the baby he has smuggled inside. The infant sleeps unnaturally, immunised from the rough handling it has received in recent days by worsening fever. Using his sleeve, the vagrant mops its brow, blowing cool air onto the pink-red face. The baby wrinkles its nose, head turning sluggishly. As it begins to stir, the vagrant takes out the precious jar, unscrewing the lid and scooping out lilac jelly with his fingers. He puts his finger into its mouth and waits. Toothless gums nibble, and the baby starts to suck. Twice more, the vagrant offers medicine on his finger. The baby takes it all down greedily. For a time, both doze, lulled by the wagon's creaking, rocking movements. Without warning, a whisper comes from the recesses of the wagon. Help me! The vagrant stiffens, turning towards a large metal cage. Grubby fingers pull back the covering cloth, exposing a child's face. Not a half-breed born to tainted humans, but not quite freeborn, not pure either. His features are sharp, his body small and thin, forged by a lifetime survival on scraps and wits. He misses nothing, mouth gaping open at the scene before him. That sword, gasps the boy. You're a Seraph Knight. I thought you were all dead this side of the breach. He speaks in tones of hushed excitement, and something foreign creeps into his eyes, the possibility of an alternative to death and pain. I'm Jem, the boy blurts, whispering, urgent, afraid that stopping will give the vagrant cause to leave. My mother trades between here and Verdigris, but something went wrong last night. A group of men came, held her down, and then others came, angry, took me away, said she owed them money. I wanted to fight, but then they'd have hurt me worse, so I stayed small, like a bug. They pushed me in this cage and put me onto the caravan. I have to get back to New Horizon. I have to find her, make sure she's all right. The vagrant says nothing. I'm sure she'd be grateful. She has money. Not lots, but enough, and... The boy falters, unsure of how to play things. She's pretty too. Real pretty. Jem is one of the last born before the lean times. Old enough to remember the stories, to have been fed on them from a young age. To him, the Seraph Knights are heroes from a time when childhood was more than the few moments between consciousness and disappointment. But he is also a child of the present, and knows how to bargain hard when necessary. He recites the words in a sing-song whisper. I invoke the right of mercy. Save me. Protect me. Deliver me. The vagrant closes his eyes. 8 years ago. 10,000 Seraph Knights march to fight in what will become known as the Battle of the Red Wave. Most strong men and women of the region walk with them, becoming squires and servants and soldiers. Mechanized beasts carry the majority of the army. For the knights, four-legged walkers with armadillo backs, or metal snakes on tracks. For the soldiers, wagons and tanks. At their head is one of the seven, born across the sky in her floating palace. Skyships trail after, like ducklings following their mother. The ground trembles at their passing. For more than 1,000 years, the crack in the ground, known as the Breach, has been watched by Seraph Knights in the name of the Empire of the Winged Eye. It was prophesied that the breach would one day open, spilling terror. But as the centuries passed and that day did not come, mankind lowered its guard. It is hard to be vigilant for a lifetime, harder still for generations. Even the seven, ageless, flawless overseers of the Empire, have become distracted, their visits to the southern region off neglected. The first invaders to float up from the depths of the breach find the knights unsuspecting. Hungry to exist, to claw some purchase in the world, the demons attack quickly, and a sleepy thousand-year watch ends with screams and blood. One man escapes, a squire who fled as the fighting began. He carries news of the catastrophe north, across the sea, all the way to the Shining City, capital of the Empire and sanctum of the Seven. On bended knee, he gives his report, a stuttering, babbling confusion, punctuated with apologies. He is forced to repeat it many times, moving up the chain of command, until he is taken to the Knight Commander, the Empire's supreme military authority, who, within minutes of hearing the tale, brings the matter and the young man directly to the Seven for guidance. After 2 days of silence, the Seven decide to punish the squire for incompetence. Once this is done, the Seven fall to pondering what action should be taken. 13 months after the first invaders arrive, the decision is made for the armies of the Winged Eye to ride out in force. Gamma of the Seven leads them, leaving her sanctum, her brothers and sisters and their devoted, for the first time in living memory. They travel slowly across the Empire, parading, glorious. The young and strong of each region are collected, swelling numbers and pride. New recruits come eagerly, for all wish to become part of history. When finally the army arrives at the breach, the enemy are waiting. From the ravine, walls of them rise, hissing, into the air like great clouds of blood. They are composed of indistinguishable things, unidentifiable save by their teeth, smiling knives side by side, 1,000,000 hungry mouths. As the army of the Winged Eye forms up, the breach vomits strange multi-legged things at them, a river of screeching scabs, scuttling towards the living. The soldiers answer with cannon and lightning, and the knights draw their singing swords. On the ground, nameless monsters are blown apart, or pierced, or shot. They crumble to sludge, bodies unable to hold integrity so far from their native soil. In the sky, dark shapes flit between the turrets of the floating palace, plucking men from the battlements. Occasionally, a turret pins one with fire, lighting its blue veins from the inside as it plunges to earth, a flaming rag of skin. Then, from the breach, something powerful emerges. In time, it will be known as Usurper, or Amag, or Green Sun, but it does not yet have form, appearing as a green shade, an unborn malevolence. Where it passes, husks fall, bearing little resemblance to the brave men and women they were moments before. A ripple of fear passes through the army, the possibility of defeat rising in their minds. Gamma of the Seven watches the battle with eyes that mirror the sky. Seeing the true threat reveal itself, she signals her attendants. They open the doors for her as she stretches, shattering the thin stone that encases her, like a bird emerging full grown from its egg. On wings of silver and fire, she descends upon the enemy. Her sword is her battle cry, and its call turns the infernal foes to ash. At her approach, the formless thing pauses, retreating back towards the safety of the breach. It is not ready to face her, not yet. Arrow-like, Gamma pursues it, and no creature from the breach dares oppose her. The enemy falls away like leaves before a breeze, until she lands on the dark shifting surface of her foe, plunging her sword deep into its formlessness. Silent, since it cannot scream its pain, ripples outwards in strands of boiling essence. It tries to flee, and Gamma follows, her blade pouring hate into the wound, sowing seeds of itself within the enemy. They float within, dormant, waiting to bloom. It is forced to turn from the yawning void and, reluctantly, face her. They fight. It is said that she fought well. It is said that she died well. The Night Commander will not have it otherwise. Whatever else is said, however, Gamma of the Seven fell that day. The order to retreat comes soon after. Barely 2,000 survive the first retreat. There is no second retreat.
Thank you, Pete. Looking forward to that one. That's awesome. If the people standing at the back want to come and sit down, there's plenty of seats. You're all standing up there. There's loads of room down here. If you'd all like to, you know, refill your glasses, sit around, have a chat, kind of hang out, and we'll reconvene in about 10 minutes, and Emma will be reading. Will you be reading from Planetfall? Yeah.
BristolCon Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the BristolCon Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.